I think creativity is one of the most important ingredients that is needed now.
What are your top AI trends for AI and data leaders to watch for?
The big one we've touched on, agentic. I think agentic AI will completely transform our world.
If you're a listener to this podcast and you're going to leave here and do something to evolve your business, what is the best first step?
I think the best first step is...
In a world that is advancing quicker than Moore's Law, you are liable to be left in the dust if you aren't actively future-proofing your organization. And Bernard Maher is working at the cutting edge of prepping businesses to be future-ready. He's a world-renowned futurist, business advisor, and international best-selling author, and he's here right now. Bernard, welcome to AI in Action.
So lovely to be here with you.
Bernard, throughout your career, you've shared your expertise in digital transformation, data and AI with some of the world's leading organizations. Could you tell us more about your background in enterprise data and AI and actually how you got there?
Sure. I have literally never done anything else. I studied business and IT and a bit of engineering, then finished my degree at Cambridge. They then offered me a job. So I actually wrote my dissertation on how companies use data and initially KPIs and analytics. And then I evaluated all the different software packages out there as my dissertation. And then Cambridge had a relationship with Gartner, and Gartner published this as one of their first reports on dashboarding tools that were out there. And this really catapulted me into this industry. And then I followed from KPIs to analytics to big data to AI. And then I started writing academic stuff, but then I wanted to do more mainstream. I started writing for Forbes. I published my first books. And alongside my academic career, I've always consulted. So the university was great. They gave me 2 days of the week to do my own consulting work. So I built a great portfolio working with some of the largest companies in the world, helping them do all of this in practice. And then for a very long time now, I've left academia behind and just work for myself now, doing a mix of helping companies understand what is happening in technology, in business, and how to get ready for it. Still lots of keynote speaking, a bit of teaching, and a lot of writing.
So for what you've done your entire life, like you said, you have to have some kind of special relationship with data. Like you have like a love of data, you have a love of Excel. Like can you tell me a little bit about like what you're like, do you have that like sentimental attachment to data?
I don't think I have that. I have a sentimental attachment to business, I think, and making the right business decision. So my real passion is much more about business strategy and making the right decisions. And this is where data came in from the very beginning when I was working on KPIs. I think lots of people don't like data. They don't like KPIs, they don't like numbers. And for me, they've always been a means to an end. You need to have insights in the business, and therefore you need data to cut through some of the uncertainty and help you fly your plane. This is an analogy I've always used. If you are a CEO or a leadership team of a company, you sitting in the cockpit, and without the right dials in front of you, you have actually no idea where you're going. And so this is a necessary evil, I guess, data.
I had to take a trip to San Francisco recently, and on the flight, and when I landed and I was driving from the airport to my hotel, every single billboard had the word AI in it. Every single one, literally every single one. I've never seen anything like it. You know, it's a buzzword in every boardroom, but what does it actually mean for a company in 2026?
It means a complete transformation. I believe that AI is the most transformative technology that we've as humans have ever had access to. And it means organizations need to completely rethink. And for me, it goes far beyond what we've seen in the past, where with the internet and the mobile revolution, some of the more transformative waves that we've seen before, companies almost used them as tools. Maybe the internet a bit more, it meant you had to rethink your business model a little bit. With AI, we have to fundamentally rethink what we do and how we do it. So companies will have to step back from their strategy and actually say, how are we going to deliver value to our customers in the future? And there's a real threat that for many businesses, whatever they're doing today, AI will be able to do probably better than they do today. So they need to figure out what is the value that they will deliver to their customers in the future. And then internally, it means that we need to rethink how businesses operate, how we run our processes, what people will be doing in order to deliver whatever they are delivering to their customers. And I believe that AI sits right at the center of this hyper evolution cycle that I'm seeing, where AI is interacting with other technologies and is either accelerating those or is being accelerated by others. So I think about the more immersive digital world, whether this is augmented reality, virtual reality. In the past, you needed a games designer to design a digital twin for you, or you needed to have, if you wanted a virtual shopfront, now you can have a conversation with an AI agent and it will build you whatever you want. So this is a complete transformation. On the other hand, we have technologies like quantum computing that will have a big impact on how we run AI, and it will accelerate what we can do. Beyond this, we have the ability to edit our genes. We have robotics that is advancing really fast, where we will have increasingly intelligent machines. All of this means that our world will continuously accelerate in terms of innovation over the next foreseeable future. So I don't think we will see these distinct industrial revolutions. It's more like a continuous acceleration that is ahead of us.
So a lot of organizations are trying to get prepared to scale with AI, but some of them are skipping the foundational work, right? Like getting their data house in order. What are you saying to these organizations?
What I'm seeing in practice, and there have been many studies that confirm this, is that lots of organizations try to jump on the AI bandwagon. They run pilots that never go anywhere. And they are trying to use AI to automate what they're doing at the moment, or maybe drive efficiency. That's not the starting point, I think. The starting point has to be your strategy, and you need to really figure out how to do this. So you need to approach this strategically. And then obviously you need to have some of the foundational things in place. So you need have the data. But I don't think that organizations should be spending time now sorting all of their data out before they can start with AI. I think what organizations should be doing is they should figure out how AI will transform their business, how they will use it, identify the really big use cases that they could potentially scale, and then look at the data they need and then focus on this. Because if they start with just let's get all our data in order first, they will miss the AI boat.
Something that I've seen in my own line of work, right, is that, like you said, organizations are looking to automate their existing processes. And they're saying, okay, we could use agentic AI to do this. We could use AI, whatever we want to do. And I think something that people need to consider is that sometimes that process that you have is no longer necessary in this new AI world. Like I've seen that happen. And have you seen anything like that? Like any examples of something like that?
I see this every single day. And I think every job that we perform currently, whatever this might be, AI will be able to take on a big chunk of that. So we need to really think about how are we changing our processes? How are we changing our jobs to deliver value in the future?
So your books have explored how organizations can become truly intelligent through data and analytics. So from your perspective, what are the biggest barriers companies face today in turning that data into something that's reliable AI outcome?
I think the biggest challenge is still the one I started talking about, which is the strategic link. I think it's super important to start with your business strategy and then create a technology or AI strategy that helps you deliver that business strategy. And then you need to make sure your data strategy is aligned to that. So all of those three components need to be aligned. And this doesn't happen. I work with lots of well-known brands, legacy businesses, and they have a big challenge with their IT infrastructure because it is still very siloed. It is still held together with lots of sticking plasters everywhere. And data is very rare that a big legacy company has the modern cloud infrastructure that we need to really leverage AI and enable AI to across the organization. And this is something that needs to happen as well. And then there are big challenges around culture too. The tech bit is easy to fix in theory. The culture is much more challenging. So, and there's a skills issue too. We need to increase the data literacy, the AI literacy in our organizations. We need to engage people in this conversation about how AI is going to transform work and the business and put people in the driver's seat to make this change happen.
Can you expand a little bit on the cultural shift you think needs to happen at these organizations?
Sure. I think it has to start at the top. I think senior leadership teams have to be seen to use AI themselves. They have to be able to understand where this technology is going. And data has to be seen throughout the organization as a super important asset that is shared across the organization. And then once this is there, we then need to create the strategy, and we need to make sure people have the skills and the tools to be able to experiment with AI and use it. So I think it's key that we give people the knowledge, the skills, and the tools to use this technology in their day-to-day work, so it doesn't feel scary anymore, that they actually get excited about passing some of the work they don't actually want to do. I was recently talking to a chief data officer, or chief AI officer for a very large organization, and she basically spent most of her time talking to people saying, just look at your job and give me the things that you don't really like doing. And let's focus on using AI to automate some of the things that you don't like doing. And this for me is a good starting point.
Yeah, the second I was able to pass off email writing to some kind of AI platform, it was sunny days. That was a huge part for me, because again, like you're saying, the cultural shift, there is fear, obviously, within the following rank of companies that, you know, this is AI, this is going to, God forbid, replace me, as opposed to looking at it as a tool that could augment their workflows, that can make them, that give them the opportunity to do the things they want to do that's most effective, that isn't just tedious, busy work.
Yeah, and the point I'm always making is, and you're absolutely right, it's like, we as humans have these amazing skills and these amazing competencies, and we don't leverage all of this. And if we can spend all our amazing competencies on the things that actually matter, that we enjoy, that drives the world forward, that makes a real difference. And if you look at the proportion of your day where you're doing something like this, this is very small. And it's very small because we get distracted by things like filling out forms and analyzing data and doing stuff that machines are so much better at doing.
Do you have advice for these organizations on building a competitive advantage using AI?
I don't think there's a one size fits all piece of advice. I think it's really important that every organization sits down and understands where AI is going. And at the moment, this is not easy because the world is changing so fast. Even for myself, I see new models come out, new capabilities come out every single day. And many of them are completely mind-blowing if I share them with people. And I'm also lucky that I get taken behind the scenes and people tell me what's in the pipeline, and that's even more astonishing. So it's very hard to keep up, but what businesses need to do is to need to stay, have a finger on the pulse and try to understand what is happening. And this is where I see my role to some extent. I try to distill all of this hype into something that helps business leaders understand what is going on in the world. And then you need to figure out what this means for the products and services that you are producing. So if you're a manufacturer, you need to think about bringing intelligence into your products and think about the capability of new world models that understand the physical environment. If you are a language tool like Duolingo, for example, I think there's a real challenge because some of the large language models are now getting so good at some of this capability that you have to really question, how am I as Duolingo differentiate myself from something like a generic chatbot that will in a few years time be able to do pretty much all of that. And this is true for even some of the largest organizations on the planet. If you think about search and how large language models are completely transforming search. Some of those companies that were at the leading edge of AI innovation forever have missed that boat and are now desperately trying to catch up.
I see my wife using one of the big LLMs rather than using a large search engine.
Yeah.
And you see it. There's this level of trust that I was shocked by users in particular, that they just said, fine, yeah, this is it. I trust it. I ask a question and I believe it totally. I used it yesterday to help me, and this is embarrassing, I didn't know how to cook corn on the cob. And so I asked an LLM, how do I do this? It gave me the answer, and you know what? I'll let you know it worked perfectly. Something that you mentioned that I think is really interesting, especially when thinking about use cases, I feel like at the top level, is there a lack of creativity amongst these people? Do they have to look at the future with a creative lens of how to use this or how it will affect my business? Have you seen anything like that?
I think creativity is one of the most important ingredients that is needed now. And I think creativity, together with an understanding of where this is going or what is in development, will allow you to identify opportunities for the future. And I think so many organizations are either stuck in this mindset, this is what we're doing, this is what we've doing, this is what we have been doing for the last 20 years. So the only thing, the only way they can think about AI and data is to think about how can we do what we have always been doing,
yes,
a little bit better, a little bit faster, yeah, a little bit cheaper. And that's not the way you need to think about AI. And what is required now is a complete rethink. And sometimes that is very scary, especially when it means to some extent cannibalizing your core business.
A lot of these organizations are transforming, right? They're going through this AI transformation journey. At what point are you brought in? And how does that affect how you actually advise these organizations?
I think they bring me in at different stages. I spend a lot of my time working with executive teams, helping them understand where technology is going, what are the key trends, and how they will impact their industry. Once they understand this, they very often realize, okay, we need to change our business strategy, and then I can advise them on where the opportunities are, where the threats are, and how they might need to rethink their entire business, as well as their business processes. That is the most exciting bit for me. I used to spend more time on actually developing data strategies for companies and AI strategies. This is still something I sometimes do, but I try to keep it at the strategic level.
So even though you have most of what you're doing is strategy level, are you privy to any of the practical struggles of, you know, implementing this strategy?
Absolutely. And I think the practical struggles that And they are the same in pretty much every organization, unless they are an AI native startup that has built this amazing cloud infrastructure and built everything on top of it. Most larger organizations have this very confusing data architecture. They have all of these different systems that don't talk to each other. They have a lack of skills. They haven't necessarily got the right culture. All of the things that we've already touched on, they are all some of the biggest barriers to making this work. It's hard for big organizations to make this work, because if you are a CEO of a bank, do you really want to bet your career on changing the core banking system that has been around for 20 years? Probably not. And this is where some of the frustrations come in, that we're trying to bold AI onto old legacy systems, onto lots of siloed data infrastructure, which then makes it extremely complicated, and usually it doesn't work very well.
So a lot of that, I believe, is data integration. And so that's where, like, we start talking about ROI, and it's costly, it's time consuming, it's complex. You have these tremendous pipelines and tool sprawl, and
governance gaps. So why is this still such a problem in the AI era?
I don't think it should be. But I think partly it's because people are scared to change some of their core systems and integrate the data. And it's a big job to some extent. Lots of organizations don't even know how some of their systems that they have in place, how they're working, and what data they're actually using. So I think it's really important to take stock and then try to pull this into a modern cloud infrastructure to have the foundation on which you can then build tools like AI.
I wonder if it's just like you mentioned a large bank and a CEO worried about changing their core business. I wonder if it's going to take a competitor to do it and see unbelievable success before you have the others even follow along in their path. I wonder if that's what it's going to take.
And I think this is already happening. And strangely enough, this is still not enough to make some of the bigger banks change. I see so many amazing fintech startups coming up as AI native companies with completely new business models, completely new processes. And it will be a real challenge for some of the bigger banks to compete. And we're talking about banks here, but the same is true for pretty much every single industry.
So you've worked with a lot of industries, a lot of different types of organizations. Did you see any very common pain points for adoption?
I think the common pain points are, again, strategy, a lack of it, a lack of leadership, a lack of AI and data skills and literacy, and a lack of good data and AI governance. Yeah, I think they are some of the key barriers that I see regularly.
Governance is my bugaboo. It's the thing I'm most interested in particularly with agentic AI. It's something that I've just been banging my head up against trying to create, and it's almost impossible because we're going from, you know, the tech catchphrase from deterministic to probabilistic, and this becomes a huge problem, and it's a tough pill to swallow for any organization. It just is. You're telling a CEO who has his core business that you're saying, listen, well, this application is going to probably do exactly what you want. And that is very, very scary. But governance, I think personally, is the most important aspect of the AI revolution.
It is very important. I think what organizations need to do is they need to firstly identify the risk levels that they're happy to take with some of these tools, and then measure the AI outputs and to make sure that they are delivering within those risk appetites that they have. And what I'm quite excited about is that nowadays we have this multimodal world where we can combine more deterministic AI with the generative AI and the agentic AI. And I think it's picking the right tools for the right purpose. And I think if you are in healthcare, for example, it's great to have a large language model that helps you to have a better conversation about whatever condition you have. But then the diagnosis, you want something to be sharp and you want a more deterministic model. And when it prescribes you medicine, you don't want any hallucinations around that. So organizations are now starting to look into this and figuring out which type of AI to use for which process. And that is quite exciting, I think.
I do. I agree. And we landed on that naturally over the course. So the organization I'm in when I'm not hosting a podcast, we build a lot of very fast turnaround applications. And obviously when the agentic AI revolution came, it was the most exciting part for everyone in the tech sphere. Like, oh my God, you have LLMs calling tools. You have all this cool stuff. We could do everything with agentic AI. And there was a point where someone on my team's like, wait, why don't we do a little bit of a mix? Why instead of just everything agentic, why don't we have like NLP in front of this, and we have a decision tree to follow, and then here in this routing area we can use LLMs to do this. And that was it's one of those things where you realize, okay, this shiny tool that is for every technologist the coolest thing any of us has ever seen, it's not for everything, and you have to use some kind of hybrid approach.
Agentic is super exciting, but I also see lots of challenges for organizations right now, because what I see is this almost lack of control, where I was recently working with a very large blue chip company, and they now have lots of different agent builders in their organization. If you think about, you have, they might have an SAP system that allows them to build agents, and they have an IBM system, they have Google somewhere, and they have Microsoft agents, and they have Workday agents, and everyone is now able to use all of these agents to create new apps and new applications and processes. How do you orchestrate this, and how do you govern this? And that's a massive challenge.
It is, because again, the thing that I think, maybe if you're not in our field, if you're not a technologist, is just how simple it is to write a functional agent, not a good agent, but a functional agent to do something. Like, it is one of the most simple things. We're not talking about the underlying technology, which was obviously the brilliant minds wherever have made this. I'm saying for the end user to create an agent, even in code, boilerplate code, you can have it doing what you want. And that opens this door to people just being like, I made this agent that does this, without thinking about what you're giving it power to do.
Exactly. And then how giving agents access to the data, that is also really important. So if you want an agent to read your emails, have access to your financial systems, to buy things, you need to be very careful with that.
So let's talk about solutions a little bit. So you've written a lot about KPIs, dashboards, and analytics. We talked about a little bit. Are you still interested in these traditional tools in this AI-driven world?
I think it depends what you mean by interested. I think they're still super important, but I don't think we need to necessarily spend a lot of time thinking about how we report data, what dashboards we produce, because we are now seeing a shift from a world where we had to pull information out of systems. So if you have KPIs, if you have data sets, in the past, we had to think about how do we produce a meaningful dashboard to inform decision makers. Do we use a graph, a pie chart, what sort of color scheme, and so on. And you, in the past, you needed to know what questions to ask and how to analyze the data. Nowadays, this is all changing. The system is becoming much more proactive. We now have intelligent AI agents that can look at your company data, and they can spot trends even before you know, and they can alert you. And because of natural language interfaces and large language model capabilities, you now have a conversation with your data and saying, hey, looks like this customer segment is more likely to churn. And then you say, okay, why could this be? Let's explore this. So it is really democratizing data. And this is why we're saying in the beginning, the data is necessary evil. Now it is becoming really useful, and you don't need to, some of the barriers that we had in the past, like, I don't really know how to analyze data, I don't know how to visualize data, they are being broken down, because you can have a conversation with it. You can ask the AI to say, give me a dashboard, give me a comparison, show me how this will develop over time. And it can then create visuals or whatever format you like.
So you mentioned before these AI native startups, these lean small companies, they're living in this world very effectively, and they're doing things that are pretty amazing. Is there anything that they can teach large organizations about this AI revolution?
I think you want the best of both worlds somehow. And I have seen startups that are usually much faster in their decision making. They can pivot much quicker. They have the right organizational culture in place to build things, break and start again. And then large organizations have the ability to scale very well, to drive efficiency across the business. And we somehow want to create this middle ground, because I've seen startups that are unable to scale, and I've seen many big organizations that haven't got the right culture. They're not able to pivot fast enough. The decision making is too slow. They're too hierarchical. So you want to bringing in a little bit of both, I think, is really important.
The companies that are trying to accelerate their AI adoption, but they also have to be very cognizant of the costs, and they want to avoid vendor lock-in. How can they actually do this? How can they accomplish something like this?
I think a little bit of flexibility is important. I think for me, it's really important to have a hybrid multi-cloud strategy, for example. So you're not saying we're putting all our eggs in one basket. We're not just going for AWS or IBM or Google or Microsoft. Actually, we have a bit of everything, or at least two or three. This then gives you the flexibility to shift and build the skill set and expertise to manage data across different platforms. That's, I think, quite important. And then you strategically, you're not running into the danger of having vendor lock-in. The other thing that's important is to focus more on open systems. I think if you use open systems that are available to anyone that you can understand, where you see how these models were trained, that's, again, is a good starting point not to get locked into anything.
So you're a futurist, at least that's what I said about you. Looking ahead, what are your top AI trends for AI and data leaders to watch for?
The big one we've touched on, agentic. I think agentic AI will completely transform our world. Another key trend that I'm seeing is physical intelligence. So humanoids and robots becoming much more capable. This is where I see a lot of development happening, where companies move. So I see beyond large language models, beyond agentic, the next one is world models, where we have AIs that understand the physical world. And that is exciting. I recently talked to a founder of a humanoid robot AI company, and within 3 years, the company went from zero to $30 billion in valuation. And the progress they've made is literally mind-blowing. Every year they've developed not just a robot that is so much more capable than the previous one, but it's a complete mind-blowing step up. So I can't wait for them for what they develop next. The reason they're building humanoid robots is because we have all the data. We can just watch YouTube videos of us doing the ironing or folding washing. And if the humanoid robot has the same shape and capabilities and limbs like we have, we can then train the AI, the robot, to do similar things. So this is super exciting.
That's wild. I never even, like, thinking about training a humanoid robot's behavior on YouTube videos has never crossed my mind. I was like, yeah, obviously a humanoid robot is just what we saw in the Jetsons or in sci-fi or whatever. But there's actually now a very good reason to have a humanoid robot in order to know the way we move and how to train them. That's fascinating. Is there anything that's, like, these are the big things. Is there anything small that maybe not a lot of people are even have on their radar that you are excited about?
I think beyond AI, I would recommend that everyone gets an understanding of quantum computing. And sometimes we think quantum computing is not fast because we don't really have really complex mathematical problems that we need to solve. We don't have a global supply chain that we need to optimize. We don't have the challenge of inventing new medicines and new vaccinations where we have billions of combinations. But the challenge is that quantum computers will potentially be able to break, or they will be able to break all our current encryptions. So we need to figure out quantum safe encryption. And that is something that every company, especially when it comes to their data, needs to be very aware of and start looking into it. Because what I'm seeing right now, as I've worked with a few government agencies, and what they are basically telling me is that data is currently being stolen from companies. That is encrypted with the hope that once we reach the quantum capability to break those, they will then be able to access that data.
If you had to give one piece of advice to organizations struggling with data complexity and these governance gaps, what would it be?
I think to really start simplifying it all and fundamentally looking at your business, the key tip is understand what is happening. So the world is moving so fast, just keep up to date. And then think about what it means for your business, and then enable people in your organization to fly with this technology. And I think for an individual, it's very similar. I think start learning about all of this, start experimenting with it. And if your organization doesn't give you the tools and the space to learn this, find another organization, because that will be the key differentiator in the future. It will be the people that have amazing skills that we as humans have that machines haven't got, like emotional intelligence, creativity, strategic thinking, interpersonal skills. What we need to be able to do is use those skills, but also be able to delegate effectively to AI agents the work that we don't really should be, that humans shouldn't really be doing. And in the long run, I believe that this is going to create a better world that will make our world a more human place, where we actually do the things that we should be doing, solving some of the biggest problems that we haven't solved yet.
I think something that really hits home to me, and as a, you know, this is my job, this is what I do, I'm building this stuff, but outside of that, there's a community, a worldwide community of people who are using these tools creatively that just want to tell people about it. And they want to show you how to do the same. And they're asking you, what do you, and this open source community is huge. And that's my recommendation to everyone listening, just like yours, is just experiment, have fun with it. It's the most interesting time to learn this stuff right now. So if you're a listener to this podcast and you're going to leave here and do something to evolve your business, what is the best first step?
I think the best first step is to learn and reflect. I think the most important skill we will need as humans is this, having this growth mindset and having curiosity to see what is happening and an interest in trying to move with the world and see what is happening. So I think learning, growing, is my main recommendation.
Bernard, this was great. Thank you so much for being here. And thanks to everyone who has been tuned into AI in Action. Stay tuned for more.